Blog Talk Radio.
All the laws and legislation in the world will never heal this world like the loving hearts and arms of mothers and fathers.
For amber waves of grace.
You know, if every child could drift to sleep feeling wrapped in the love of their family and God's love, this world would be a far more gentle and better place. President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans and to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Look here. I'm talking about America.
She's here for your country. She's here for your state. She's here for your family. She's your voice against the erosion of your culture. Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present your culture vigilante, Miss Lisa Payne Nager. She's here for you.
Well, good Wednesday evening to you. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your culture vigilante hour, and we're happy to be with you again. Another fine Wednesday fall evening. It's a beautiful outside. I so love the fall. It's my favorite time of year, and we are almost to Election Day, which makes it even better because, as Dave always knows, I am ready to roll. By the time election gets here, I'm usually ready to roll. I'm so done with all the stuff that's going on. We've been debating the issues on Facebook and on email threads and working for our candidates and going to meetings, and you know, I'm kind of done with it. And speaking of done with it, Dave Court, our Mr. Hour of Truth, is here with us tonight. How are you, Dave? Are you done with it?
I'm good. How are you, Lisa?
I'm done with it.
I know you are. A couple more weeks. Hang on. A couple more weeks.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm working on it. So we've been kind of busy on the Facebook the last couple of days debating this Prop A thing. That seems to be the hottest issue among the grassroots. What do you think, Dave? And once again, no surprise to anybody out there in the internet world, you and I are on opposite ends of an issue.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that's less than surprising. We're not on the opposite end of a lot of issues, Lisa.
I know. How's that work? I mean, we always seem to be at odds on stuff.
Well, although I see your side of the issue did pick up another endorsement today in the ever flip flopping cops union in St. Louis, who were for this and then against it, and now for it and now against it again.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's good news, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be like this, I think, all the way to the bitter end.
Well,
I think
the way that this happens, and it's just like any other issue that you and I find ourselves on opposite sides of, I think, like the Constitutional Convention for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of those issues boil down to issues that really do break conservatively either direction. You know, you can look at either one of those, and if you are a conservative person, and I use the word conservative, of course, the way I always use it with a small c, because you and I are you're more of a capital C conservative, and I'm more of a small c conservative libertarian. But if you're a conservative at all, and you look, say, at the Constitutional Convention or at this,
mm-hmm.
then you have hardcore issues with either side. In this particular issue that we're talking about, you know, if you're a conservative, you absolutely hate the thought of union, mayor, corruption, and integration. You absolutely hate the idea that
that
the cops may be getting sold out for a larger political goal. But then, if you're a conservative, you also are torn because you feel very, very strongly about control should always be as local as possible.
Okay.
I mean, we fight that with the education system every day, don't we?
Well, yeah, okay, but especially on this issue, I mean, the people that are proponents of this issue are selling an ideology. Okay, and the ideology just does not match up with the reality of the situation. Now, they have done, kudos to them. They picked a great selling point. A lot of people are buying the baloney and following the ideology along. I mean, it should, and I would agree. I mean, you know, this is the way it should be. You should have local control. But the reality of the situation just doesn't warrant that, and we know, regardless of what's written in the legislation changes, things change, and there's just too much corruption for us to be making this kind of a change at this time. And that's really where the big debate is. So, you know, on one hand, you have the supposed facts of what's being proposed and the ideology of that we all want to have local control, and then you have what the reality is. It's being financed by huge financial money who buys a lot of political influence in Missouri, and you know that should always raise a red flag because that, you know, nobody, he's not doing it out of the kindness of his heart. There's something to be gained from doing that. So, I mean, that's the issue right there. Such thing.
I mean, if that's the issue, I mean, yes, I think that's a significant issue. But if that is the issue, then it's no different than the issue of, you know, I mean, there's big money behind elect Romney. There was huge money behind don't throw Governor Walker out. So, I mean, if it's just a matter of money corrupts,
yeah, but,
then we don't get into anything here.
This is an initiative. This is not a person. This is different. Somebody stands to gain something from this. And not that they wouldn't stand to gain something from backing candidates, because that happens as well. But this, I think it's a little bit different when it's an initiative. I just do.
Well, I think, you know, I think I don't have $150,000, but I think if I've got $50, I put it where I've got something to gain.
We all do. So nobody donates or finances or puts financial backing behind anything without expecting to get something in return. I expect to get something in return too when I donate to a candidate. I mean, so I think that argument right there is a little moot, don't you? I mean,
well,
it's
the argument you made. You made this totally evil because someone is donating money that has, and that someone may or may not have something to gain. Well, when we all donate money, we all think we have something to gain from the donation, and the fact that this guy has more money than
you.
Yeah,
but they're selling it. They're selling it as it's the right thing to do because it's local control.
And so you're saying that it won't be local control? You're saying that if the state steps out of the way, the people of St. Louis won't be controlling their police department anymore? So that's a lie?
I don't believe that they will. And just because you're – I think that's it. I think that's kind of the deal. I don't really think they're going to have the local control, and I don't think that just because the people are going to be voting to get local control, I don't think that's really what they're going to get. I think they're going to get something totally different. And they're selling it, and the fact that they're selling it as it's the right thing to do, and we all want local control because, you know, under the way our government is supposed to be structured, we're all supposed to have that. I don't think that's what they're going to end up getting.
But the people vote for Mayor Slay, right? And you're suggesting that Slay will have control of the police department. Now, that sounds closer to local control to me than a bunch of people that are appointed by the government. There's no local control for the people of St. Louis there. They can throw Slay out anytime they want to.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to see that happen. Kevin is going to be on with us in a few minutes, and he made a great point today on Facebook. You shouldn't have legislation geared toward who's in office. You know, the legislation should work for the folks regardless of who is in office. So, and I think that was
right.
A great point. So anyway, I want to touch on something else. Speaking of backing people and money and millions and all that kind of thing, I got something in my email box today, in my inbox this week. And I thought it was kind of interesting and significant. Todd Akin sent out an announcement that he had raised $1 million.
I read that, yeah.
Yeah. So $1 million, when you're dealing in a big campaign like this, $1 million is not a lot of money. But I think it's quite significant in this case because Todd Akin, a lot of that money came in very small donations. So that translates into huge votes for Todd Akin.
Right.
So I looked up on the – oh, go ahead.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the email that I got said he'd raised $1 million on the internet. He actually has raised a lot more than $1 million, but just his internet campaign that you and I send in $20 to has mm-hmm. raised $1 million. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think if we ever get some decent polling, which I don't happen to believe in anymore, I think it should explode for Aiken. Under those kind of circumstances, if he's raised $1 million over the internet, that's pretty darn good in this short a period of time since the explosion of the controversy. And I went on and looked at the filings. Okay, so as of the middle of July, I think was when the last time they had to file their campaign contributions, Todd had about not quite half a million dollars in cash on hand. Claire had $3 million more than that at that time. So interesting enough with the finding, you know, I think the $1 million is significant, but it, you know, it's not enough to win a campaign, but I think it's significant because I think it all translates into votes. However, we're still not seeing any money from the RNC.
Right.
And I find that troubling and disturbing.
Me too.
So, and I posted a little picture. I got yet another solicitation from the Missouri GOP yesterday in the mail, and I posted it on the Facebook page and sent them a nice little courteous little note in black Sharpie and bold letters that I was not going to send them any money, and I thought that they needed to use their influence with the RNC to get some money for Todd because I believe they are connected. I consider them one and the same. It's just my personal opinion. I know that people could argue that, but if you do happen to get any solicitations from the Missouri GOP or the RNC, send them a little note and send it back to them in their postage paid envelope and tell them that you're not going to give them any money until they get some money for Todd, because losing this election would be devastating for Missouri, and we need that Senate seat. And if we lose that election, I think it's going to change the face of the way that people look at the Republican Party. What do you think?
I think so too. You promised just a couple of weeks ago. Was it Perry that you were talking to from the Aiken campaign that night?
When? Which night?
Oh, two shows ago, you had someone on from the Aiken campaign.
Ryan Height. His
oh, choice. Ryan, yeah, okay. Are you going to get him? You promised him you'd be touching base with him again. Are you going to get him back and we can ask him about how it looks with the RNC now?
Yeah, I'm actually trying to get Todd on. So we'll see if we can one more time before the election goes.
He won't come on with me, so yeah, he might come on with you.
Why wouldn't he come on with you? Don't you send him enough?
I don't send him enough love letters. He wouldn't come on with me when I was doing the primaries, and I think it was because I was a little hard on him during the primaries. Of course, I'm in his corner now,
uh-huh.
but he wouldn't come on with me during the primaries.
No, we'll all kiss and make up. We'll get it all fixed.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, today was the last day to register to vote, so if you didn't register today, you're out of luck. You can't vote in the election, and if you're a Democrat, that's a good thing. We're happy about that. And tomorrow,
You saw the announcement, right, about the voting? By executive order now, Barack Obama, because of the massive turnout expected, he has, and people pay attention to this, he has made an executive order that says because of the big turnout, Republicans will vote on Tuesday and everyone else will vote on Wednesday this year.
Excellent. That's fine. That's great.
Right.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
Yeah.
So tomorrow's the debate. I have to go to a meeting. My daughter's graduating high school this year, so I have to go to a meeting for that. So I'll have to TiVo the debate and watch it. But are you going to be there for I wish I could watch it live. I'm just dying.
Is start at 8 again?
I don't know. My daughter's got it already TiVo'd. So
it depends on, you know, I'll be tuned into Kevin's show tomorrow, so it depends on when it starts whether I'll be there or not.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, speaking of Kevin, let's take a break. Let's get Kevin on here, and we'll continue some of this discussion. And we'll talk about not only is Kevin a new member here at MGC Radio, he is also running for county council in Jefferson County, so we'll talk to him about that. Let's take a break and bring him on in a few minutes.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners,
show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
That really is my favorite quote from the convention. And I have to say thank you again to Dave for putting together all of those returns and the intros. I love that Romney intro that I had today. I love it, and I have been remiss in helping Dave get his intros together from the convention, but I just think Condoleezza was so right on with that peace through strength thing. People just don't get it. We got to go back to the Reagan thing about peace through strength. We would just not have a huge percentage of the problems that we have, but if we could all get behind that idea. But anyway, thank you, Dave, for putting that together. I just love it. And we're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. And with us tonight, our first guest is Kevin Harned. And Kevin is the newest member of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition family. He has a show here on Thursday evenings from 7 to 9. And Kevin is also not only working with us at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, Kevin has taken the leap. And he is going to run for, or he is running for a seat on his county council in Jefferson County. Welcome, Kevin. Thanks for being with me tonight. I'm glad to have you here.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm glad to be on with you and Dave, as always. It's an honor. I appreciate what you're doing. You do a great job with what you do, too.
Well, thanks. We're pleased to have you with us. We love your show. You just bring a great new perspective to Missouri Grassroots Radio. You have great guests, and it's always informative. And you've been doing radio for a while, so this obviously isn't your first rodeo. You've been around for a while, right?
Right. I would say since about 1997, somewhere in that. I think it was 97 was when I cut my first tooth. So it's not. I wasn't weaned on it, but I've been kind of in and out for quite a while. And it's you know, it's one of those things, Lisa, we look at a lot of different issues. Just locally, I felt like I needed to run for office at the county council level. The incumbent that I'm running against has got the old Democrat mentality of protecting the people from themselves. In the meantime, by limiting our choices and our liberties in the process. And that is, Jefferson County is known. I mean, I 20 years ago, I watched an episode on Hard Copy, an old program that used to run a long time ago. And it was about Jefferson County and the Good Old Boys Network in Jefferson County, Missouri. And, you know, he's been serving on a lot of these different commissions and planning and zoning and everything else. I'm not going to say he's a bad guy. He's just got different ideas. And those ideas are in conflict with what we stand for at Missouri Grassroots Coalition.
Well, it sounds like you live in St. Charles County, because we have those same kind of issues here. And I would guess that most of the people listening, you know, out there pretty much believe that the same kind of good old boy network exists in their counties as well. I mean, I know it does here in St. Charles County. And that attitude that you spoke about, you know, the saving us from ourselves deal, that's just prevalent everywhere.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it is. It's just everywhere. It's just like bubbling out of the ground. And it's not only, you know, in your county level, it's in the state level, and it's on the national level. But one of our main goals here at Missouri Grassroots Radio is to kind of focus inward a little bit, focus on the local level. You know, we obviously do hit the state issues really hard, And we do pay attention to the national issues, but really that local level interest has to return, because really if you're going to make changes, you really need to start there, right?
Right. And if you go to my website, which is unitedfortruth.com, on the issues page, you'll see that I've actually got listed 28.1 straight out of the United Nations Agenda 21 Charter. And if I could just read a part of that briefly. Because so many of the problems and solutions being addressed by Agenda 21 have their roots in local activities, the participation and cooperation of local authorities will be the determining factor in fulfilling its objectives. Local authorities construct, operate, and maintain economic, social, and environmental infrastructure, oversee planning processes, establish local environmental policies and regulations, and assist in implementing national and subnational environmental policies. As the level of governance closest to the people, they play a vital role in educating, mobilizing, and responding to the public to promote sustainable development. And this mm-hmm. right here has its roots in a lot of my motivation to run for local office.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm seeing, you know, through our unified development order, through all kinds of other things, it's just, it's abundant. It's everywhere. And we need to really rein it in while we can.
We've had Ray Cuneo on the last few weeks talking about Agenda 21 and just those issues right there, this what sustainable development is and what it means for your local community. So, Kevin, when you attend your county council meetings and you see your county council in action, what in your mind, what specifically or how specifically do you intend to address this?
Well, first of all, bring light to them. I've been able to bring light to some issues that I have witnessed. One of them being a special work session that was called on behalf of the council member that I'm running against. And it exclusively, when it was stated, it was just posted on the internet 48 hours in advance. It was a work session that wasn't on a regular work session night, mm-hmm. so it fell on a different night. It fell. It was held in a different building than what it's normally held in. I was one of three in attendance. And whenever you saw the posting, it just said proposed changes to the solid waste ordinance. And in reality, what it was they were trying to broaden the definition and change the definition of a derelict vehicle, which would have affected all the farmers, every citizen of the county. Because whenever you're talking about derelict vehicles, I mean, it even derelict vehicles may include but are not limited to cars, trucks, motorcycles, construction equipment, recreational equipment such as boats, campers, motorhomes, ATVs, and go-karts, lawn and garden equipment, and trailers such as utility box and boat. So there are so many subjective things in that proposed amendment, one of my favorite being, you know, that you would only have one farm vehicle exemption as long as they ran, and we're talking about farms. A lot of times farmers, they don't register every vehicle they got because there may be a case to where they've got an old farm truck that they never leave the property with. So they don't bother registering it, even though they may pay taxes on it, they may not put plates on it. And this would be, you know, if you look at a tractor and a trailer, there's two vehicles according to this right there. If you're only allowed one, that's putting it above. This is one of my favorite sentences in here. It shall be the burden of the property owner to demonstrate that the vehicle is fully operable upon request of Jefferson County code enforcement officials. So, I mean, it's whenever we look at the fines and penalties for this, it could be up to $1,000 a day and up to a year in jail. And it just goes on and on and on with the abuses against personal property.
And in a rural county like Jefferson County, I mean, that issue right there is just critical to a huge part of the population down there, I would think.
It's huge. I mean, really, by the way that this is written, first of all, what is partially or totally dismantled? You know, that's totally subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Has portions of its bodywork missing. And those shall be considered derelict. You know, if it hasn't gotten plates on it, if they're, the plates are more than 6 months old, it's not only citable, but it's a derelict vehicle. I mean, the way that it's written, if it cannot move forward or backwards under its own power, under the request of the Jefferson County Code Enforcement official, right then and there, if your starter's out and in the economic climate that we have, somebody just can't afford to get their car fixed at that time, you know, there's a derelict vehicle. It's not, there's no other considerations taken, and again, it's just a one more time a violation of personal property rights. It's one more way that the nanny state is becoming involved. And you know what's funny is whenever we look at, first of all, I'm not big on I don't believe in anonymous complaints. Anyways, it's too subjective. It's too easy. The county always does it. Whenever they brought up the because he was working in conjunction with members of planning and zoning whenever he proposed these changes, you know, everything that you heard was, well, we're not really going to go out and police these things. It's just going to be done off of complaints. And everything that we have pictures of or anything that we have complaints on has been anonymous. I mean, in all honesty, who could argue with anonymous? How do you know that you're just not – maybe somebody doesn't like the questions you're asking? Maybe somebody – that may sound, you know, far-fetched, but it's not. And it's just – I believe that it's too subjective. If you think about it, too, communication among neighbors, what you're going to be doing is using the county to extract revenge on neighbors that you don't like. That's where most of those are going to come in. And you've also got a breakdown of communications between neighbors to where, hey, if there was something going on in the neighborhood, maybe you wandered over and talked to them about it. Now you hop on the phone and you sick the county on them. And I don't believe that that's a proper role of government.
Well, I would agree with that. And the problem is, though, you can't really trust government, you know, to come up with common sense solutions for things either. So you have to craft, or it's thought that you have to craft specific legislation that leaves nothing to the imagination, and that causes you problems too. So what
absolutely
do you do?
It does. Well, whenever I'm looking at the UDO, there was the Councilman Lane had co-chaired the UDO changes that was proposed. There was, I believe, 33 changes to the UDO, and some of those things included, we had a family exemption to where if somebody wanted to gift an immediate family member up to 5 acres, they wouldn't have to get a full-blown survey. They wouldn't have to get a survey at all. They could just deed it over. It wouldn't have to go through planning and zoning. And what it was going to do is it was going to strip that gifting out of the UDO, and it was going to cause you – if you had 60 acres, you were going to have to get a full-blown survey at the cost of thousands, several thousands of dollars, and then you were going to have to push everything through planning and zoning. And, you know, this was just one of the provisions. In the meantime, one of my questions, whenever I'm sitting there and I'm listening to them discuss some of these changes, I'm looking at Article and Section 400.2880 of the current one, and it's talking about greenhouses, and I'm looking down, and it says a greenhouse may not exceed 25% of the ground floor area. So basically what you're talking about is the foundation, the square footage of the foundation of the residential structure it serves. All plants grown in the greenhouse shall be for private, non-retail, or wholesale use. So here again, like I asked council, some of the council members, why in the world, you've already got everything restricted to 25% of the floor footage of the home, it's obvious they're not going to be supplying schnooks with vegetables. Why in the world is it anybody's business what they do with the plants that are grown in it as long as those plants are legal? You know, why should it be, shall be only for private, non-retail, or wholesale use? You know, and this is just one example of a multitude of different things that I just find are a violation of property rights.
Absolutely. And why are they trying to dictate to people anyway how much they can grow in the way of vegetables and if they can share them with their neighbors or sell them to the corner market? You know, what is that? When did that become somebody's business?
And you know, honestly, one of the answers that I got from one that I asked who is – active in liberty causes. Well, we worked on this a long time, and you just can't weed out everything. And I disagree. I mean, it's not – whenever we're looking at these different things, it's how hard is it to try to correct that when you're in the process of correcting trying to weed out so many other areas? I just don't think that's an adequate reason.
Yeah, I would agree. Not enough common sense back into the government. It's all been squeezed out and totally eroded. There's just no common sense in it anymore.
So I've never held political office. I've been active in some youth sports leagues.
You're in for a treat.
Well, I have been president of a little league, so I've been schooled well.
Go ahead.
If you want to find agendas, believe me, I'm going to tell you, I learned some life lessons in that scenario that have really, in a way, blessed me on many facets of dealing with folks.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it sounds like you kind of need to cozy up to your county prosecutor, too, and school some people in the Sunshine Law implementation there and enforcement, because it sounds like they're playing fast and loose with your Sunshine Laws down there.
And they have in the past. And like I said, too, you know, you just have a good old boy network that's still kind of still around. He's been part of planning and zoning. And again, he has stated publicly that it's the best run department in the county. I don't believe that. So, you know, if you're looking for differences, you're going to find the differences in that. It's either, you know, you're going to agree with my philosophy or you're going to agree with his.
Well, I know that you're probably campaigning really hard in Jefferson County, probably doing a little door-to-door and shaking a lot of hands and trying to explain your position to people. But how can folks get in touch with you? How can they find out about your campaign, Kevin? How can they help you?
If they would kindly go to – well, they can email me first at kevin@unitedfortruth.com. Or they can go to the website itself, and there's a link that says I want to help. If you fill out the form on there, that would be great too. So I will receive that, and I will be getting back to you very, very shortly. I know that everybody's busy, and I know that their funds are tight. It's really a matter if you know anybody that lives in the 6th District of Jefferson County, which encompasses much of Hillsboro, all of DeSoto, all the way down to Valley Lake, Old Mines, over to Olympian Village, any of those areas, Hematite. If you know anybody that lives in those areas, just ask them to look me up and ask them to, you know, check me out. See if I bestow the values that they appreciate, and hopefully they will decide to vote for me on November 6th and let me serve them. Instead of our government, which is what it's done, it's moved into a role that is more of a master role than a servant role. Let's try to bring that back to where it should be, the governing philosophy where it needs to be.
Excellent. Okay, get in touch with Kevin through his website. Also, don't forget to tune in to him tomorrow night. He'll be right here on Missouri Grassroots Radio at 7 o'clock every week on Thursday nights. Kevin's Hillbilly Logic joins us here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thanks for being with us, Kevin. Feel free to hang if you want to.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Lisa. You guys are doing a great job. And by the way, too, did you guys see where the big buzz is right now on Huffington Post and some of the other liberal rags? There is a businessman. And I love the title to one of them where it was talking about a wealthy businessman threatens workers with vote. And this guy named David Siegel is a CEO of a company named Westgate Resorts. And what he did was he sent out an email to all of his employees saying that he could not incur any more costs, and that if taxes are raised on him, raised on the company, exponentially, then layoffs are going to have to be a reality. And so they are using this as a means to act like it's just another wealthy man who's threatening his peons into forcing them to change their vote. And that's not, you know, it's just a case of educating his employees and telling them, hey, this is the cold reality. If you guys, you know, if he's elected and I incur any more expenses or damage to my business, we're going to have to trim the staff. And, you know, just another classic case.
Useful idiots.
Yes. It's amazing. But thanks a lot, Lisa. Appreciate it. I'll let you guys get back to your show. You're doing a great job.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Ray Cuneo. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
We're back, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We hope to be able to give you lots of great information so that you can go out into your community and take your government back. We just heard from Kevin Harned, who is our new Thursday night lineup here at Missouri Grassroots Radio. He's our hillbilly logic guy on Thursday nights. He's running for county council in Jefferson County, the ultimate example of going back into the community and taking your culture back. He's actually, you know, made a step and working for that in the right direction. And right now we have Ray Cuneo. When we spoke to Kevin, he's one of his pet peeves of issues in Jefferson County are Agenda 21 issues, and a lot of folks don't really understand what that is and how that relates to you on a local level. And Ray's been with us the last couple of weeks, giving us a very good education about what Agenda 21 is and how it affects us. And I was happy to speak to Ray earlier this week, and we've recorded a segment for you so that Ray can continue to go on and give you a little bit more education about the Agenda 21 issue. Here's Ray. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And once again, we have with us Ray Cuneo, and he's going to give us yet another update on the Agenda 21 issue. He's been doing a great job of outlining how that really affects us nationally and locally across Missouri. And he's going to continue today with giving us a better outline on how the federal government and the local governments work to implement Agenda 21 in Missouri. Thanks for being with us today, Ray.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So let's continue on where we left off last week, and let's bring this home a little closer into Missouri to find out how we're dealing with this on a local level.
Well, you know, Lisa, on the last program, we were in the going down a list of how the federal government through the state and local governments implement the provisions and policies of Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. And we, last time we covered the master plan, which is very important, impacts many, many people with planning and zoning. This time I'd like to pick up and carry forward with what I would call, I won't say it's more important in how they want to implement it, but it's hand in hand with planning and zoning, and that is called the federal grant funding for regional planning. Federal grant funding for regional planning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just quick background on what regional planning is or what regional government is. Many people probably the vast majority of citizens out there have no idea that we have what is termed at the federal level and the state level and local level, regional governments. Now, regional government or governance is not a constitutional form of government. And it basically encompasses a certain geographical area of political subdivisions like X number of counties and X number of cities. For example, here in the state of Missouri, we have 19 regional governments. We have what is called three, which is what is called metropolitan regional governments. That would be St. Louis, Kansas City, and Springfield. In the St. Louis area, obviously, anybody that's heard of the East-West Gateway, that is our regional government, which encompasses, I believe, seven counties, four, I believe, on the west side in Missouri, and three on the east side in Illinois. There are also 16 rural regional governments throughout Missouri. We have 19 regional governments. We have three metropolitan and 16 rural regional governments. The regional government concept is significant in how the federal government wants to bring federal funding into the states. Now, this is occurring all across the United States. It's just not Missouri. I reference these, the number of rural and metropolitan regional governments, so that people here in Missouri get a grasp of how broad this is. And it's all of Missouri. Every square inch of Missouri is covered by some type of regional government. So in August of 2011, a little over a year ago, I received a document from a friend of mine who is a county commissioner in Texas County. And it was quite interesting because it was called a regional planning grant application for memorandum of agreement that was being handed out through the regional government bodies. Now, every regional government in the state of Missouri has an executive office. Obviously, we have one in the St. Louis metropolitan area, and each of the 19 have a regional office. And Federal Housing and Urban Development has chose in August of 2011 to pick the Boone Slick Regional Government, which is in Warrenton, Missouri, to spearhead their regional planning grant program. And so they sent out all of these memorandums of agreement, which was very generically written, a couple of three pages, didn't sound too bad, basically saying to county and city governments that if you sign this here, you're going to make yourself available for a whole host of federal funding to help you plan your communities and your region. So we got that document and started calling around to a lot of the county commissioners and a few mayors around the state, and come to find out that, as I said, the executive director in Warrenton, which is the Boone Slick regional government, three counties, consisting of three counties there, was really the one that is spearheading this, going to each of the county governments and each to the city governments in each of those respective regional government areas. So, in other words, they were trying to cover all of the counties in Missouri and all of the cities. Now, this was in the regional. Okay. Housing and Urban Development from the federal government was spearheading this.
Okay, so explain to me about the funding and how that works, because obviously it's really going to be about the money. If you're going to present something from the federal government in this way and make it alluring to these regional governments, I mean, they're going to be jumping on this money for projects, right?
Well, yeah, and let me be clear here. This is not funding. They're separate funding. This is not funding, federal funding for, let's say, a new firehouse or a new fire truck or a new whatever for city or county government. This is regional federal funding money that wants to lay out how that respective regional area will develop in terms of livability, where people will live, how they will transit from one area to the other, where they will work. It's basically, it is a social engineering document that is using land and transportation to guide the development of where people live and how they work. The federal, and once this, will you sign this document? If you're a county commissioner or a city mayor or town council, you sign this document, then you become available to get these monies to support whatever planning. Now, they're very specific in saying that if you sign this, you must adhere to their 68-page detailed document. The unfortunate part about it, the best we could find out, the county commissioners and city mayors around the state in the 16 rural regional governments never saw the 68-page document. They only saw the three-page document. Now, the devil's always in the detail. Now, in the 68-page document, it lays out a whole host of things that government at the local level is expected to do in order to get this federal funding.
Right. So, like with any other federal money that comes into the state for education or
that's separate
roads or anything, but it always comes with strings attached, and this is no different.
Absolutely. Now, let me just give you an example. East-West Gateway, St. Louis Regional Government, got $4.7 million a year ago this past July to start implementing in the seven counties and City of St. Louis pilot projects to implement sustainable development. The idea is here, there's a whole host of federal fundings that comes down from the federal government. We know that, as you pointed out, education and a whole host of other things. But this is specifically is designed to encourage and guide local governments towards the federal government's concept of sustainable development. Now, I don't know, maybe I had mentioned this before, but in that 68-page document, the federal government defines the term livability as a measure of integration, and I'm quoting here, integration of housing, transportation, environmental, and employment amenities accessible to residents. A livable community is one with multiple modes of transportation, different types of housing, and designations located within an easy 20-minute by transit, that means train or commuter, 15 minutes by bike or foot, and 10 minutes by car. The idea is they want to eventually, over a long period of time, lay out and use this federal grant money at the local levels to push more and more any development or any living into a more concentrated high-density development. In other words, stop all this nasty urban sprawl. Get people out of urban or rural environments and push them into cities or towns to meet this livability standard. Now, it's very clear also in the 68-page document that they expect local government, and again, I'm quoting here, expedite implementation of living principles, which we just talked about, through changes in local zoning and land use laws and regulations to remove the barriers to sustainable development for housing, economic development, transportation, and related water, sewer, and environmental quality issues. It is a social engineering concept using federal funding to plan where people live, how they use their land, how they use resources. Now, this here was pushed by this rural regional funding for the 16 rural regional governments was through the Housing and Urban Development. The three metropolitan, East-West Gateway, Kansas City, and St. Louis, is being spearheaded by EPA. As I mentioned before, the three agencies, EPA, Housing and Urban Development, and USDOT, are the main Gestapo agencies, I call them, in implementing and carrying forward the provisions, implementing the provisions at all levels of government, right down to the local level. And
so last week you explained to us how there are provisions in the sustainable development outlines for where, you know, I mean, it's kind of a, they've got provisions to where they want to go into the counties and mandate that, you know, it, through the roads that they can oversee any land that they can see from, so that, you
right.
know, they have, they're the king of all they survey, and now they're
right.
pulling everybody into the communities.
That's right.
To where they can't live in those wide areas. They have to live into the communities, and they're structuring the infrastructure and the transportation so that they have to be bottlenecked into these high density areas.
And as I mentioned before, you have these three agencies. You have in EPA, which is the kingpin in this whole thing. They call the shots in terms of, and always the environmental issues trump the other two, the economic and the social equity issues. And anytime there's a conflict there, the environment always wins out. In other words, if people shouldn't live here because of an environmental reason in terms of what EPA defines, then people shouldn't live there, and they expect through this carrot approach, although EPA has a lot of stick approach too, but through this carrot approach, they hand monies out to local governments and say, look, we don't want people. You need to implement enabling legislation or enabling ordinances at the local level to try to guide people back into what we call sustainable communities, where they live in a community as defined as I just quoted here. And, of course, they are very clear that they expect local government to implement those regulations or to have enabling legislation and regulations. And what this really does is by getting this approach, either through the master plan approach, which we discussed last time, or through this here approach, by getting local government to sign up for federal funding or local government to implement it through the master plan, that is local government doing it. It's not the federal government. And everybody says, well, what's the big deal there? The big deal is that the federal government gets, if they're challenged in court, they get the what I call the jurisdictional monkey off their back. In other words, the federal government comes in and says, look, we didn't do it. You people have implemented this. You have implemented that at the local level.
And they've circumvented their legislature. They've circumvented their state legislature. They haven't gone through the state legislature. They've accepted these federal funds, so now they are obligated to perform whatever the federal mandate requires. The legislature on a state level has had nothing to do with it. The community government has had nothing to do with it. It's just a done deal.
Absolutely, and not to get ahead of ourselves here, but down the road we're going to talk about what is being done at the state levels to stop this here. In terms of state legislation, and that's a bit of good news, but we'll discuss that later. But the important thing is right now is for people to realize that this is coming at you, the individual, living where you're living, from every aspect you can imagine. And, of course, the two main ones that I focused on here is the master plan planning and the regional holistic. They call it holistic. Now, let me point out why they call it holistic. If you have a regional group of counties, just pick a number, say 8, and you may have 400 cities or towns in that. The Housing and Urban Development says, look, we will give you the money to your executive group in the regional planning group, and it will be disseminated out to the counties and to the cities from the executive regional staff at the regional planning level. And what that does is it tries to draw in every city and every county. But let's suppose there's a county or some cities that say, we don't want any part of this. The federal government has in the 68-page requirement a mandate that if you get 50% representatives of the population. In other words, enough of the population out of the cities and counties to sign up. Then the federal government looks at it as a holistic, all-encompassing planning document for the entire eight counties. Well, even if, let's suppose you had one or two counties, X number of cities, it doesn't make any difference. You're drawn into it contractually through your regional government. So that is a very deceptive way of how the federal government gets, let's say, unwilling folks to participate or unwilling local governments to participate.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we face right here in Franklin County, because our local government here has said, look, we don't want any part of these federal grant regional planning funding. We're in, we just so happen we're in East-West Gateway. But the fear is, can we stave off the pressure that's going to come to us from the executive committee or the executive group of East-West Gateway? Now, let me point out that a regional government, as I pointed out before, I think, is not a constitutional form of government. However, it is legal in the context of it is authorized by state law. As far as I can tell, most all of the states in the nation have some provision to use the concept of regional government. But it's a deceptive way for, again, for the federal government to move monies into the local community and use the carrot approach to impact how people live, where they're going to live. And again, as I said before, government doesn't look at trying to accomplish your goals necessary tomorrow or next year or 5 years. They look decades down the road. As the older generation dies off, the new folks come in, and the new generation comes in. They're educated in this stuff. They think it's great, and that's how government evolves into this Agenda 21.
Yeah, it's a long-term indoctrination process.
I'm sorry?
It's a very long-term indoctrination process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It sure is. And
okay. So I think next time, Ray, will be really kind of important. Because we're running out of time, next time can we talk a little bit about, give people a little bit more of an outline of what sustainable development and the Sustainable Living Project really means to them. What is the plan? How's it going to look for me or for my neighbors or for you? How do they really expect us to live? Will you be able to outline that for us next time?
Sure.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you, Ray Cuneo. We really appreciate you being with us. This Agenda 21 topic is just amazingly important. People just really, this has been going on for quite some time. It's been going on right under our noses. And as you can see, as Ray has outlined here, it's coming in through various channels, circumventing our own state legislature and even our own little county governments. So, and it's right there. It's right under our noses, and
no,
we're obligated
and
to
Lisa,
it.
It's circumvented. I mean, Congress. Congress has had no say in this. It's come straight down by executive order to the federal agencies. As you pointed out, it's coming in without any direct knowledge of our own state legislatures. So you're entirely correct in that.
And next week also, let's find out what the state legislators do know and how they're trying to fight it.
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks, Ray Cuneo. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is the Grassroots Minute. We hear all the horror stories from the environmentalists that put forth the idea that oil fracking is destroying the earth. Of course, until they test the water before any fracking is performed, they are mostly political in nature to fit their agenda. For instance, the movie Grassland sounded terrible until it was discovered that the water there had been ignitable for decades in a well-known natural occurrence. Did anyone notice the fact was left out of the movie? If there are dangers or downsides, we need that confirmed and remedied, but must not let this government limit our ability to produce our own energy. We could become a third world country overnight if the Saudis decide to cut off our oil. Do we want to chance that? Fracking has been going on for decades. It was only when it appeared that natural gas was going to be the energy of the future instead of solar and wind that the big stink came about. I believe the extreme environmentalists and the folks who want to implement Agenda 21 are behind this scare. Another little-known fact is that the poster child of green energy, Germany, has given up on solar and wind after spending millions and millions on subsidies. German President Merkel is a realist and wants to save the economy of her country. Therefore, Germany is in the process of building over 30 coal-fired plants in her country, and we are shutting down our coal plants. What does that say to you? We need the energy that it produces to stay energy independent. The environmental nightmares of the green energies are never discussed. Have you ever asked yourself why? I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We had originally planned to have Bill Thacker on tonight. He's going to talk to us about Gulen schools. We have a Gulen school here in St. Louis, and I believe there's one in Kansas City, and it's just fascinating information that we would want to continue to be able to bring to you folks out there in Missouri and across the country. We had some technical difficulties, and we're going to work with him to get him back on next week. I do kind of want to touch and give you an update on the St. Charles County ballot initiative situations out here. Last night, I went to a town hall meeting for the Save Our Sheriffs campaign, and the folks have mobilized. They're doing a great job. They have raised a substantial amount of money for a very fast, very effective grassroots campaign. They have yard signs, door hangers, push cards, flyers. If you go to Save Our Sheriff Department, that's DEPT.org, I believe, and you go there and you look at the action page, you can go there to get information about where you can get push cards and yard signs and things that you can do to help the campaign. They're going to be looking for poll workers. They have started a letter writing campaign, and on that page as well, they have all of the email addresses for every county council person in St. Charles County, the county executive and the sheriff. Please send them a letter. There's a draft letter there for you to copy, modify, or you can write your own. There are website addresses for all of the local newspapers, all the patches, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the St. Charles County Journals. And I would really urge you to take advantage of that situation. If you want to be helpful and you can't go out and knock on doors or participate in any other way, please write a letter to your local newspapers, because they do not, you know, it's a grassroots campaign. They've raised some good money to get some materials out, but they cannot necessarily buy advertising. You know, they've just done this so quickly, and they've done a very good job, but the only way that we're really going to be able to defeat this issue in St. Charles County is to get the word out. And I can tell you, I was handing out push cards over the weekend at one of the county fairs and talking to people, and, you know, most of the people were not aware of what's going on here with this initiative to take our voting rights away to elect our sheriff. And when they found out about it, they were incensed. And there is enthusiasm to support our initiative here, but really they just need to know about what's going on. So writing letters to the editor and writing letters and calling in on the sound off on the St. Charles County Journal and getting that information out to the folks is the best advertising that you can do. So please go and participate in the letter writing campaign. Also, I want to tell you that this Saturday from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock, we're going to be meeting at the corner of Highways K and N in St. Charles County. And if you're familiar with St. Charles County at all, you know that's, you know that intersection very well. We will be there from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock with a sine wave. We'll also have flyers and push cards and door hangers there, and we'll be there trying to help raise awareness for the Save Our Sheriff campaign from 12 to 2. If you'd like to come a little bit early, the K&N Patriots meet from 10 to 12. Come on out and meet us, and we'd be happy to have you there. But it should be a pretty nice day, so come on out. We'll have yard signs for you to take home. We'll have flyers and all kinds of things. So come on out, Highways K&N, from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock this Saturday afternoon. Also, There are a number of other ballot initiatives on the ballot in St. Charles County. The St. Charles County Sheriff's issue is not the only one. There are six initiatives on the ballot. And I talked a little bit about it last week. I just want to give you a real quick rundown of those initiatives this week. You should vote no for all of those initiatives. And the basic reason is that your St. Charles County Council, bless their hearts, decided at the last minute in August to put all of these things on the ballot lickety-split. No public input was put into this. There was no information put out to the community. There was no ability for the community to give feedback to the council. There is very little research done on the questions. And I will tell you, most of these initiatives in one way or another lead to a huge power grab for the county executive in St. Charles County. So they do, as in the Save Our Sheriff's campaign, it takes away the people's right to vote for a sheriff. Also, a lot of the powers, if these initiatives pass, will put more power into the St. Charles County executive. He will be able to oversee all the employees in the elected officials' offices. He'll have the power to reappoint county council members who vacate a seat for whatever reason. Your rights and your responsibilities as citizens is just being taken away from you. So we're going to have Terry Herring on again next week to go over those initiatives in detail so that you can become an informed voter in St. Charles County. And with that, I also want to reiterate, you know, I've been talking a lot here the last few weeks about the initiatives in St. Charles County, and I hope that we've been able to educate folks and the people understand what's going on. I hope the people across Missouri are watching what's happening in St. Charles County, because if it's happening here, it can certainly happen to you in your county. And what we want to be here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition is kind of a clearinghouse for that kind of information. We want to be able to bring this kind of information, spread it across the state and across the internet, so that we can all come together, you know, not just one county strong, but all of the counties strong as a voice to oppose this kind of intrusive government. So when we go up against the St. Charles County Council or the St. Charles County Executive, they know that it's not just the citizens of St. Charles County that are watching this initiative. This is the entire state of Missouri that are watching this initiative, and we don't like this kind of politics happening in our state. So please, if you have ballot initiatives or if you have issues going on in your county this election season, drop us some information at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Oh, Dave, you're going to have to help me with the email address. I forgot the email address. Info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org.
Info, right.
Okay, great. And my email address, let's see if I have that, for Missouri Grassroots Coalition is lisa.payne-nager@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. So either way, send us some information. We would be happy to help you. That's why we're here. That's the whole purpose of Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We want to unite the grassroots and the citizenry across this state so that we can be a very loud and strong and effective voice so that we can take back our government. This is the culture vigilante mantra. You know, you've got to get involved and you've got to take care of this yourself because no one else is going to do this for you. So come to Missouri Grassroots Coalition, tell us what you've got going, and let us help you unite and get that word out for you. I would say, Dave, that we've probably spent our evening here.
Pretty much used up our time, have we?
Tomorrow night, we've got Kevin, Hillbilly Logic on Thursday night. And Friday, we're not going to let Dave forget what day of the week it is this week, and we're going to have
We are. We're going to do it.
Okay. And I'm hoping to be able to join us, Terry, Ms. Mike. We can all recap what happened tomorrow with the date that I'm going to be. You will be on our group. Got anything special planned for you?
Well, yeah, you are going to bring, we're going to talk specifically this week about St. Charles County, because you are bringing six, if I understand correctly, six different ballot initiatives aside from the state initiatives, and we're going to kick those around a little bit.
Yep, we will. I've got all of that. I can give you all that information and in a little bit more detail on Monday, and we'll definitely go over it again on Wednesday.
And I can't imagine that you won't be be ready to tell people how they need to vote on those.
Oh, I've definitely got an opinion. Since you've known me, I've not got an opinion.
Sure.
And I'm so happy to give it, especially if you ask me. And you don't even have to ask me, and I give you my opinion. So.
Sometimes that's right.
That's right. Okay, so we have had a great time here on Wednesday evening, every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock here, Culture Vigilante. We'll be here with you. We're glad to have you here. Please join us again and join us on all the other nights of the week that we've got programming here. And go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and join. If you haven't joined yet, sign up so that we can be an effective voice when we need to come together on some of these hot issues during election season. And after the election's over, you know, the hard work really begins, because that's when we'll have to be holding people's feet to the fire, all those lovely campaign promises that they made to us after we have a great, huge victory. Okay, we're going to sign off, and this week I'm sure that we're not going to have any problem getting the Kate Smith signature off. I had a little problem in the last couple of weeks, and since Dave is running the board for me tonight, I'm sure it'll work just fine. So we're signing off for tonight, and we will talk to you again soon.
Good night, Lisa.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.